Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello.
That sounded really creepy. Hello.
Hello and welcome to episode number 71 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Edward Lamb, and Sean Orford. How are you doing, Sean?
I'm doing very well.
You okay?
How are you doing?
I need to flick to the right page on my browser here for our notes because I'm on the vehicle tax renewal page of
Big day today in Britain.
It is.
Yeah, there will no longer be any paper tax discs. Yeah.
I can never get mine stuck on properly. There's always a little bit, kind of.
Well, you won't have to worry anymore.
I know. Ditch it.
Now, the one that you've got stuck in your car now, do you leave it there forever now as a memorabilia? A
memento.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Weird.
Be there a while.
End of an era.
I know. I'm not going to miss them, really. It makes sense what they're doing. But I'm actually 12 hours overdue. But the website's down. I can't log in and do it, so I need to make a call to this.
As long as it's paid, no matter, is it? The issue about, you know, can we become paperless? It happens in the offices all the time. Mm-hmm. And I'm often thinking about, can I be paperless? And I'm a lot more paperless than I ever was.
I'm pretty much paperless.
I have that distrust, you know. There's lots of guys, like, at the network that scan stuff into their equipment. And I'm thinking, that's okay, but if it goes down, you've just lost your year's accounts or whatever you've just done.
Yes, the cloud and all that stuff.
Yeah, so it's an interesting one, that.
Yeah, no,
I wonder whether we need, like, a backup server or something in the house.
Maybe.
To back up to.
I've got my work backing up all the time, do my accounts online.
But where are you backing up to?
Well, it's on my computer and it's in Dropbox.
Right.
And, yeah, that's about it, actually.
Yeah. So do you need a backup of the backup?
Probably. Dropbox back everything up, all my websites back up. I don't know. We're not talking about going paperless this week, are we? We're not talking about tax.
But we should. No, not this week.
We're talking about failure. And currently the vehicle licensing website is down, so that's failed slightly.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure there's some people learning plenty out there, trying to fix it.
I'm disputing the word failure. I'm having an anti-failure week.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll come on to that. You have written a blog post, haven't you, Sean?
I have,
which is on the website, so...
Yeah.
For people that would prefer to have a quick read rather than listen to us all the
or
time.
Or both.
Or both. Yeah, there are some...
Yeah, people do tell me that they do
crossover
both.
Bits and bits we don't talk about. So go to liveinthepresent.co.uk. If you don't know who we are and you're new to the show, take a look anyway and find out more about us. Follow us on Twitter and all that. Sean might respond to the odd tweet every now and again.
I live in an email world and even like a Facebook world, but tweeting never feels natural to me.
Mm.
You need to give me a seminar on tweeting.
Yeah, I love Twitter. Have a sailor to me on there and I'll be right back at you in seconds.
You're on. I should do
it. In seconds. How you been? You been up too much?
Yeah, I'm good. My main work in life is still doing the Atik. It's getting there. It's very, very close.
Are you going to rewrite your book once you've...
It's all going to happen. One of the big things I'm going to do up there is I'm going to do all the audios of the books, which people have been saying to me for years, please, can you do some audio?
You're
going to
get Stephen Fry down.
No, I'm going to do it myself.
Oh, yes.
I have to do a bit of practice, though.
Do I have to edit them? They're going to be like 16 hours worth of audio to edit.
Yeah, no, they're going to be... It'd be an absolute joy for you.
I can't wait, Sean. I cannot
wait. I can tell.
I'm excited. yeah, I've had a cool week, too. I'm still waiting for the call. Any second now from the... From the missus, number two shortly arrive. Going to be arriving. It's exciting.
Yeah, it's good.
I think we're ready. There's a bag packed somewhere. I'm not sure where it is actually. It's not by the front door.
Yeah. Do you find this time exciting, or does it make you anxious, or are you level about it?
I'm pretty level about it. You know me. Yeah. I've got quite a bit of work to do before it happens.
Yeah.
Before I stick
the you have your laptop in the delivery suite saying, just hang on a minute, I just need to finish this.
Like, I mean, I don't know how I'd get away with that. I don't know how I'd get away with that. I'll probably check my emails, which it shouldn't be. But, I'm one of them. Do I take the 2 weeks paternity leave? I mean, I can do. I could probably take more, but I think back to what it was like having a newborn baby. And Will was pretty chilled out, still is, but they sleep a lot, don't they? So I think I'll just be working from home a bit more. rather than.
I think that it's great that us men are more involved in that whole process. I think it's good.
Yeah.
You have a good supportive extended family network.
Very lucky.
Which is different. When you've got a couple that are on their own somewhere, no family around, and they're trying to look after each other, that can be tough. You know, someone's got to go to work and...
Yeah.
Yeah. But when you've got a good network around you, that makes a hell of a difference.
We're really well set up and... Yeah, me being a teacher, the perks for being a teacher for maternity leave are pretty good, really, in terms of pay and all that stuff. So, hey man, we're doing well so far.
It's good.
So yeah, wish us luck.
Yeah,
I just want to mention a couple of things as well. I mentioned last week one of our dear listeners has a blog called, I said, Bit of a Warrior. It's actually Bit of a Worrier, which I actually prefer the Warrior, I think. But you know who you are out there. I apologise for our email, I was put right, but I just read it too fast. I actually like bitofawarrior.com or .wordpress.com. Yeah. But yeah, check out bitofawarrior.wordpress.com because there's some new posts on there this week, actually.
Good.
So apologies for that error. And also we've had an email from a listener who was... their ears pricked up when they heard me talking about Bethan and not thinking she's creative, my wife, because she can't draw. And turns out this lady, who I shall mention because her book has been published, Caroline, wrote a book for her son when the son was about 2-3 years old, same age as Will, and to have something positive, like a positive story. Not that kids' books aren't positive, because I read hundreds of them and they're awesome. But it's kind of self-help for 3-year-olds. And this book, which kind of sat on a file on a computer for years, has now been published online for free on lifesquared.org.uk, which is a really cool website. Yeah. Actually, I think we should contact them and maybe get some of our stuff on there.
Yeah.
If they'd have it.
Yeah.
But this little book for 3-year-olds is just really, really cool. Just amazing. So I will put the link in the show notes. Caroline, amazing work. It's really cool.
And when you're talking about putting stuff up online, I've had a couple of people ask me why we're not available on SoundCloud.
Yeah.
Apparently, podcast. Yeah, podcast. Apparently there's people saying to me, would be much easier for them to access it on SoundCloud.
Yeah. I know about SoundCloud. I'll look into it. I'm sure we can just publish it to there as well.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of feed issues and stuff for the iTunes and all that. But
yeah,
I will see what I can do.
Okay.
I will, but I'll have a bit of time to spare soon.
That's good. So that'll be a success.
It will be a massive roaring success. And that leads us beautifully, Sean, into this week's topic. Nice segue there. Because 2 weeks ago we talked about success, what it means to be a success, and I think one of the issues raised in that was the importance of failure, wasn't it?
Well, I want to start off by saying that I don't like the word failure. I think that failure, like can't and ought and should and must, should be banned from the English language, because the concept behind failure to me doesn't work, it's not right. Failure assumes things like fault, blame, mistakes. It's all that kind of negativity. I've learned over the years for myself and working with other people to see what we would describe as failure as actually learning points.
Right.
Yeah, and if it were not for those learning points, we wouldn't correct ourselves or get on the right course or do whatever that creates what we then determine as success.
Yes.
Yeah, so my thing is that failure doesn't really exist. Because earlier on, you said to me, have I ever been a failure? And I say to you, for me, the only failure I ever have, or I've ever had, is my inability to recognise the learning points when they're there.
Yeah.
And that's the only failure, really. Because if you recognise the learning points and you respond to them, then inevitably you get to the point of success.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if I wallow in failure, maybe I don't move, maybe I become inert.
It's a negative word, isn't it?
Yeah, so. I'm a failure, oh no.
Yeah, yeah, but the word exists and it's used on a regular basis, so I'm going to call it failure. But there are plenty of examples, aren't there, out there? We've talked about quite a bit in the past about people that just develop a kind of a resilience to failure, and the resilience is a bit of a buzzword in self-help circles at the moment.
Yeah,
and in fact, there's a lady called Jo Casey that she's a bit of a resilience expert. She's got a podcast, and we need to get her on the show. We just need to pin a date down, actually, Jo. So if you're listening, I need to drop your line, but I will.
Yeah, love to.
Um, But yeah, there are people out there, and we've talked about modern day ones like the Rovio, who made Angry Birds.
Yep.
Big successful game. It turns out it was game number 52 that they developed.
Yeah.
I don't even know any of the games they made previously, and very little is spoken about them. So often you just see the end point, don't you, in a success.
But would you say that those previous games were failures, or were they just learning points on the way that led them to what we see as success?
Well, yeah, they're kind of both, aren't they? they will have failed by some kind of measure of expectation. Maybe it's downloads or revenue generated. But yeah, no, I can see the value in that failure is massive.
Yeah.
So maybe you've got to look at the amount of money that will have been spent. It's not so much a loss, is it? It's an investment, that money.
Yeah.
In the end game.
Yeah, maybe it would have ceased to be an investment if halfway along the line, up to their 52nd one that worked, they'd given up.
Yeah.
But they kept going. That's the resilience bit, isn't it?
Yeah.
So if you look at Edison and the light bulb and his 2,000-odd elements before he finds tungsten that works,
yep.
And he just keeps going after one after another that doesn't work, and he learns from that because it's a learning point, not a failure, and moves on to the next element.
Yeah.
Yeah, until he finds the one that does work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is this something we've got any notes on, but I'm going to put you on the spot, Sean, and usually come up trumps, so you always have an answer to my questions. One day you're not going to. But is resilience something that can be taught, or is it just something that kind of is inbuilt?
No, it's something you can learn.
You can learn.
If you, in the same way that the concept of failure is a concept, because failure is in the eye of the beholder, like beauty is. Yeah. If you're looking at resilience, if I believe that I can get up and get on with it, I can dust myself down, and I can learn because it's a learning point, not a failure, then I become resilient.
Yeah.
If I believe that I am out for the count, I'm done, I'm in the corner, I've had it, then that's what I do. That's the thoughts become things bit about mindfulness and cognitive behavioural responses. If I believe it, then that's what I play out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the change in the concept is fundamentally important.
Yep.
Which is why I'm kind of burning on about this idea about using the word failure. And maybe it's not the word that is the issue, it's the concept behind it. If I say to you, you are a failure, do I mean, well, you've made a mistake, that's a learning point, you could get up and sort this out? Or do I mean that you're a waste of space, you're out for the count, I don't know why I bother with you?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's what's behind the word.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think that we use it so negatively rather than seeing it as positive. So this is entitled, isn't it, The Importance of Failure.
Yeah.
Because if it were not for the things going wrong, I wouldn't learn to grow and develop so that things got better and better and better.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about instances where the word failure or fail is used, and early on in our lives, it is used, isn't it, in kind of the exam setting. So if you don't get, GCSE, I think it was, was it A, B, C, D, E? And then fail.
Yeah.
So early on in our lives, we learn about failure, don't we?
Yeah.
And I don't want to keep slagging off the education system, because I got in trouble with my wife, because she's a teacher. I keep slagging off teachers, but I don't mean to, because they do an amazing job. And there's deeper issues.
But education is a good example of how we set people up to either succeed or fail.
Yeah.
If you look at places like Sweden, where the kids don't go to school till they're 7, they have a different approach to that, do they, than what we would have. So we've got kids of 3 and 4 that are being tested.
Yeah.
You know, as they go into the school system.
Mm.
It's a very different way of looking at the individual and the person.
Yeah.
And maybe that changed the way that they look at themselves.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That kind of relativity thing, I mean, to me it happens in all levels. If I'm teaching a yoga class and I've got a bunch of people in front of me, people will be watching each other. And if someone is more flexible than you, or they can do one of the postures in a more flexible way than you can, people are looking at them and they're kind of trying to force their body to match what the other... So it becomes a competition rather than somebody living in their own body in their own space.
Yep.
Yeah, so they can see themselves as a failure relative to the person sat on the mat next to them. Yeah, but that's an internalized situation. It's not a real situation.
Mm-hmm. Are you into the idea of goal setting and like targets and having something to hit? So if you don't hit it, you're a failure. But
I love that. I love
that. I guess the issue with that is, I don't know, I'm pretty sure what your answer is going to be anyway, but if you give yourself a target, say I want to make £1 million this year in my business, and you don't hit it, you're a failure.
Well, that's interesting. Chicken soup guy, Jack Canfield. Yeah, he did that thing where he put the $1,000 bill or whatever it was, or $100,000 bill up on the ceiling above his head, and he didn't make the 100,000 in the year. He made something like 96.
Yeah,
and he says, "Did I see myself as a failure? Of course I didn't.
Close enough.
You know, and that's it's because it's relative. If you're definition of success is £1 million, $1 million, and I only make 500, maybe in your eyes I'm a failure, but in my eyes I might be an the most amazing success. It's how I see it, how you see it.
There's a key there as well to be doing meaningful work, isn't it? Or work at least, or that you believe in, you know. If you've got no objective or you don't believe in what you're doing, then you're onto a loser already, aren't you?
Yeah. I've had an interesting one currently, in that I was due to run a marathon at the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
And my leg's gone. I've torn and pulled something in my leg. So the message from coach Conrad and physio is, don't do it. Now, there's part of me that feels that experience of kind of let down and kind of bereavement of not doing it.
Yeah.
But the strange thing is that I've run both the half marathon and the metric marathon distances in training. So I've already done it.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it that I would need to run in an official race and get a certificate and a gong to wear around my neck to say I've done it? Because I've already done it.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
so it's that weird thing about recognition of what I'm
doing. Yeah, we were talking before about graduation, weren't we? I didn't go to my degree graduation ceremony because I was off having a laugh with my pals in Magaluf, actually, again, Flippinek.
I haven't been to any of mine. No.
I didn't mind one little bit, to be honest. I didn't really need the bit of paper, but I feel bad because my folks haven't got that photo of me in the weird
with the flat hat on.
I could just Photoshop it, to be fair. I nearly did, so I feel bad for my folks because they haven't got that picture, but I didn't need to go because I'd done the work, you know, and enjoyed the process, and then I was ready for that next stage,
yeah,
that job application. So I had I could tick that box.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, no, I didn't go to any of mine. And in that sense, like the issue of actually running the marathon race, why are we doing that? Why would I do that? You know, I could say I'm challenging myself against, but I've already done it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's the issue of what is it that for me would equal success? Do I need the T-shirt and the gong and the piece of paper to say I am a success? Or can I just feel my success without needing to do that?
Just live it, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And who am I being successful for? Or do I need to be successful in the eyes of other people, or is it in the eyes of myself?
Yeah. Well, those little markers along the way for success, inverted commas, they are just little fleeting moments, aren't they?
I worked with a guy once, years ago, who was a multi-millionaire, and he had a barn on his estate that was full of cars. Like, there was a Ferrari and a Jensen and all kinds of things in there. There were some amazing cars in there. And he used to drive around in this bust-up, battered old Austin, England car, which was really, really old thing.
Yeah.
I would talk to him about it, and he didn't dress like he was had money coming out of his ears. He just looked like a regular Joe driving around, and he would say that there were times when, because of the people he mixed with, he had to wear certain clothes and drive a certain car, but when he was just naturally being himself, he didn't need any of those trappings.
Yeah.
So it's like, who are we doing this for? Who do we have the big house for?
You and your pink noodle.
Yeah. Noodles are us.
Regular listeners will get that. Was it the pink noodle?
Yeah, it was a pink noodle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still can't believe you bought a car over the phone without even looking at it.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because for me, a car is a metal box with a wheel at each corner. And as long as it's comfortable and warm and it stops and starts and the sound system's okay, I'm all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did you know over the phone that it had all that stuff?
Well, I knew. One of the things was, it was a regular manufacturer, but they put a 4-year unlimited mileage warranty on the car.
Okay.
And I was doing crazy mileage, and I thought, can't argue with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the crazy thing was, in the 146,000 that I did in the car, nothing ever went wrong. They were right.
Fair dues.
They did, yeah.
And I've got a pal with a flash car, and he basically doesn't take it off the drive at the moment because he moves around in his work, and he's got a 40 mile commute, and every day twice. So, and it's a sports car, so it goes through a set of tyres in about 3,000 miles, low profile. Mm. It's a powerful car, really cool actually. Which is sitting on his driveway.
But
I guess the neighbours are looking in thinking, that guy's a success. And he actually listens to this show, so and he is like... Well.
But maybe that's it, isn't it? Is success something that we need other people to see? You know, do we dress in a certain way or drive certain cars, whatever, because we need other people to acknowledge?
We hide our failure as well, don't we? So... It's not something that people will openly talk about all that often. They kind of bury it. Maybe we need to.
I think that's more British.
Okay.
You know, when you're in the States, to go bankrupt may be a pain in the backside, but very often when you're in business, if you haven't been bankrupt, well, you haven't got your feet wet. You know, you're learning. It's a bit like if you go to a marriage guidance counsellor. Do you want to go to someone who's lived in this perfect relationship with this person since they were 15 and they're all loved up and it's all lovey-dovey and they've had a wonderful time? Or would you rather go to someone who's maybe been divorced and worked it through and got married again and made it work, you know, that kind of stuff? It's like, is it better to be with people who have been through the learning points of life and have learned from them as opposed to someone who's...
Hasn't
got their feet wet.
I get that. But yeah, mate, the culture in Britain of not discussing failure all that much. Maybe we need to bust that culture open.
And I think certainly from a male point of view. We said a couple of casts ago about the majority of the people that I see are female. Probably 80-20, you know, percent. And the men have so many problems in admitting that they have an issue.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And the woman is much more keen to sort stuff out, get herself straight.
So I have it's not a gratitude journal really, but I keep a daily journal of good stuff that's gone in my life for each day. So I've been doing about 3 and a bit years now. It's cool. Yep. It's a good little book. Only three lines a day maybe of that.
Are you going to publish it at some point?
Maybe. Yeah, it's cool.
Thoughts of Chairman Ed.
Yeah, at some point whenever. Yeah.
Yeah.
People will want to read about me one day.
Yeah.
But is it like a time machine?
Would that be a success when they want to read?
Maybe. They're probably, yeah. I've been published. But maybe people should have failure journals. Counting all the lesson points.
Learning points.
Learning points.
Yeah,
yeah. What do you reckon?
What are my learning points today? That's interesting, isn't it? What did I learn today? And that can help me change tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's different having a failure journal, isn't it? Because it's that whole image of failure that I have problems with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, imagine saying to a child, and I'm sure loads of kids get it, you know, you failed, you're a failure. Yeah. It's like the poor kid who goes home and says to the parent, I got 99% for maths. And the parent says, why didn't you get 100? You know, I mean, Jesus, to get 99% is amazing.
Yep.
Yeah.
I got 100% once in a maths test.
Did you? Wow.
It was like
Ed, you're a real success. Well, in my eyes, you are a success.
It's the high point of my educational career, probably, because it was probably year 10 or 11, so just GCSE. So it was like, they were like practice papers for GCSE, and everyone in the year would do them. We were all in sets for maths. I was in set 3 out of 5, no 6. So I was all right at maths, and I've always quite liked numbers. But this one test we did, it was like the third one of the year. We were lining up to go into the classroom, and I think it was Mr. Hodgson, the teacher, maths teacher, and I remember it really vividly actually. He came out of the room just to kind of come say, right, in you come, but before he did, he said, Mr. Lamb, step out please. And I knew it was kind of results day, and he kind of said, listen, I want to talk to you about your exam, your test mark. I was like, oh, flipping heck, I failed. Well, I've got below the 40%. So I thought I'd done all right, actually, but he said, yeah, listen, you got 100%.
was that in front of other people?
It was in front of the whole class. Wow. And everyone was like, I got a bit of a cheer. I couldn't believe it. But I was actually really worried because what I thought he was going to bump me up a set or two, because there were only three people in the whole year that got 100% in his test. So he, a couple of the maths geniuses did. And then I think even my pal Alan, who he was a grade A guy, like he's my go-karting buddy, he didn't get 100%. I think it's the only time I ever beat him at anything in school. I thought I was going to get bumped up a set, so I was a bit worried about that success, because I thought I was, all of a sudden I was going to be out of my depth, because I was quite happy in set three, you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting.
So in that case, I actually almost wanted to have done a little bit, not quite so well. I wanted to fail a bit harder.
Yeah. But the interesting thing also was that when you were called out, your instant response was, oh my God, I failed.
Yeah.
That's why I'm being called out. And that's the kind of negativity that happens around failure.
Okay.
Yeah. As opposed to maybe there were, you know, guys in the class who did get less than 40%.
Yeah.
And maybe for them, that would have been the magic point where they would have got the help, the learning point that would have raised them up to the successful level,
yeah,
rather than being written off as a failure. Mm. Well, one of the things that I was thinking about when I was writing the blog was, I've said to you on several occasions that running races always seems bonkers to me. You know, like you get the 100-yard dash and there are... Well, there's one winner and eight people are really kind of fed up with what they've done. And I was thinking about that as I was writing the cast. And I was thinking, maybe it's not like that. Maybe you get the one person who is the apparent success. Then maybe the person that came second has come third or fourth for the last 10 races. And the fact that they've come second is like, wow, that's amazing that they feel so successful.
Yeah.
And maybe the person who came last, who would appear to be the total failure in the race, is having a really good time because it's the best time they've ever run it in.
The guy that just made the final. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was thinking about that a lot and realising that issue about what I have seen as the bonkersness is competition, maybe isn't competition at all. Maybe that's my stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I remember Roger Black, 400-metre runner for Britain.
Yeah.
Like back in that era when, I know you're not into your sports, but Britain had loads of really good middle-distance runners. Steve Cram.
Oh, yeah.
Roger Black,
yeah.
Chris Akabusi, all that kind of stuff.
I know those names.
Yeah.
I know those
John
faces.
Regis. No. I used to use a 200-metre runner.
All right.
Cool guy, actually. When we had loads of characters on the track in the Olympics and all that stuff.
No.
Maybe it's just because I don't watch it enough anymore. Who might know? Sally Gunnell, that kind of era.
Mm-hmm.
And Roger Black got silver medal at the Olympics. I think it might have been the World Champs, but I think it was the Olympics 96. Atlanta, was it? Maybe 2000. But he got silver behind Michael Johnson, who's still holds a world record for 400, not 200 anymore. But I don't think he'll ever be beaten. He was just light years ahead of everyone else, and he would just win by 20-30 meters.
Wow.
So for Roger Black, gold medal was silver.
Mm-hmm.
And he got the silver medal, and I remember his interview afterwards. He was just absolutely beaming because he got silver, and that was it, man. That was the absolute best he could have done. He was overjoyed, but yeah, he came second.
Yeah
It's cool, isn't it?
Yeah. I think one of the things I've learned about the whole kind of running thing is that to get to the end of the race is the success. And the issue is about what time you do it, and it's completely secondary. But the fact that you achieve the race is a feat in itself.
Yeah, no, I think someone just broke the world record for the marathon.
All right.
2 hours, 2 minutes. So we're getting close to that the royal we, human race.
To the 2 hours.
To the 2 hour mark.
Do you think I'll be able to do that? On a motorbike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you wonder if this guy that just did it in 2 minutes, 2 hours, 2 minutes, run 26 miles in 2 hours, was disappointed because he didn't break the 2 hour barrier.
When I did 16 miles, it took me 2 hours, 46 minutes.
16 miles.
16 okay. miles.
Yeah. I mean, the pace of this guy is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Kenyan, I think he's a Kenyan guy.
Yeah, those guys have extraordinary legs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
they have a way of running. I've learned this, where they push off the back leg, and if you photograph them when they're between steps, both feet are off the floor.
Right.
They're actually flying through the air. They run like a deer or an antelope. Yeah,
amazing.
It's a different style of running, and I've been looking at it and thinking, how could I do that? But it doesn't come naturally to my leg.
Yeah, but we know from all the podcasts we've done previously that the joy in anything whether you win or lose is in the journey, isn't it? It's the bit in between.
Yeah.
The setting the target and the completing it. It's that bit in the middle.
Can you remember when you were a kid and people used to say it's not the winning, it's taking part that is the thing? And that is actually real.
It's actually a bit of truth.
At the time, it didn't feel like it. When, you know, you've just lost and they're saying it's not the winning.
You've contributed towards something grand, haven't you? It might not be a race or a sporting event, it could be anything.
Yeah, yeah. And that idea of if you're doing kind of rugby or something or football and you're running around the field kicking the ball about, you know, that can be fun in itself.
Yeah.
You know, forget the result at the end.
I was a bit of a midfield maestro, football-wise. I was kind of attacking midfielder, like a winger, fast little guy on the wing. But, so I didn't get that many goals, but I used to take a lot of joy in a good assist, you know, setting up a goal, a good pass for a goal. That's what I take a lot of pleasure in.
The only thing I ever did, which was sporty, that was at school. No, I did run the 220-yard race, but the... which I won a few times, but I was the wing three-quarter in the rugby team. So I was the little guy on the end, so they'd pass the ball out to me and I'd run up and score the try.
Man, rugby, yeah.
Yeah, and that was okay as long as I didn't bump into one of those big guys who was a fullback who would to lie on top of me, so 6 feet
stone. Yeah, man, I don't like rugby. I got too successful at rugby at school because I got picked for the squad one, so I had to go train with the really big lads just because I was fast and I could
that was my thing,
but I couldn't tackle. I would deliberately like slip over, pretend to slip over so I wouldn't have to tackle this 8 foot beast that was about to plow right through me. So I remember going to training and then just staying clear of everything and so I wouldn't get asked back. Jeez, rugby. So okay, I think we have to wrap it up, but
yep,
I've got 3 points here if you want to. For happiness, is to keep learning, keep writing, and keep working, man. If you just keep working, you need an end point in mind, maybe, but just keep working, man. No, you just got
to bash it. I think that you need to have somewhere to go. I've been working with a few people lately of different ages, but one of the classics for me is somebody who has taken the early retirement at 50 or 55, and they've got to 70, 75, and their life has become meaningless.
They've
just stopped doing things, and that idea about having something to do, having a goal to aim for, is a good thing.
Yeah, but remember to enjoy the process.
Yeah.
Of getting there, because 99% of the time between picking the goal and completing it, 99% is in the middle, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Getting towards it. So
yeah. If you don't enjoy the bit in the middle, then it's a waste of time doing it.
Yeah, and you got to create little check marks along the way, haven't you?
Yeah. So, yeah, I do that in the podcast. I explain some of that about creating a timeline to work to, but not setting it in stone, allowing it to be a bit flexible, moving it around. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Fail often and repeat.
So, are you a failure or a success?
I'm cool with the word failure. But, I fail regularly, stuff, but I enjoy the learning that comes out of it.
Yeah, I'd say that I have experienced lots of learning points and continue to experience lots of learning points.
Yeah.
But I'm not buying the word failure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I feel pretty successful as a person, and I feel like I'm moving towards bigger successes for me that I will see as successes.
You're getting there.
Yeah, and actually completing the attic will be a success.
Oh, my word. Yeah, jeez. I don't believe what I said.
That would be a success.
Can you imagine? You'll be able to hear the cheer when the podcast goes live.
Yeah, I think we need to do a video podcast from the attic.
We could. All righty. Have you got a resource of the week, Sean?
Yeah, I'm sticking up an article from Psychology Today, which is... Wired for Success. It's like a blog article, and it's very, very interesting. One of the other things is if you look on WikiHow, they've got some interesting stuff on failure on there.
WikiHow, your favourite resource?
Yeah, no, I think it's a good little resource. That's good.
Yeah, cool. Nice one. I'll stick that up. It's a little 2-part video series. They're only 4 or 5 minutes long each of the videos, but I've watched a good chunk of one of them. And I'm saving it for later because I want to properly digest it. But twistedsifter.com, The Importance of Failure. And it's two short videos which kind of focus on Leonardo da Vinci's career.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And the fact that it was throughout his life, for much of it, this guy wasn't all that... Well, he was highly thought of, but he, in his eyes, he was there were a lot of kind of blank periods in his life, apparently, apart from the really famous stuff he did. So there were all these, there were 16, 20 year periods where he was doing nothing but just sketching every day and learning and just keeping to himself. But obviously we look back hundreds of years on as him, as one of the geniuses of humankind, don't we? So,
but one of the things that's interesting about that for me, and I'm just looking at what your this resource, it looks really interesting. Mm. The is that he may have actually seen himself as a total success all the time. You know, maybe the artwork that he did at the time, even if it wasn't recognised by the people around him, maybe with each paint stroke, he was going, wow, look at that.
Yeah.
And feeling really good about it. The fact that other people now value it in other ways, either artistically or financially, is secondary to his experience of it.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yep.
Or it could equally be, couldn't it, that we are now saying this is the most amazing thing. And he was looking at it going, oh, my God, I completely messed that up.
Well, I do work with a couple of artists, just the websites and stuff, and it's amazing how quickly they go off their work. And I do it with the web design I do often. You know, I work on a project for a month or two hard at it, and I like it, but then within a month, I'll just be like, I don't want to know anymore.
But I've known a lot of artists who will be working in a garret and they're painting the most amazing things, but their emotional fulfilment is in the painting. And once it's finished, they don't care what happens to it. It's they're on to the next project.
Yeah.
And the person that makes the money is the business head who pays them a small percentage and goes and makes a fortune in their gallery whilst they're back in the garret painting another painting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess both of them are getting their own fulfilment in different ways.
Mm.
We might see that as exploitation. But maybe it's not. Maybe it's just two guys fulfilling themselves.
Who knows? Okay, but have a look at the video, man, and I'll have a look at your link. They'll be on the website, livingthepresent.co.uk. Next week, we're going to talk about dealing with long-term illness, both from the side of the carer and the person suffering or the person in trouble.
Because
we've had an email from a listener, pretty heartfelt one, actually, which has triggered that.
Yeah.
So we'll dive into that next week, won't we, Sean?
Yeah, we'll do that. Okay.
Yeah, anyone else out there has got anything you think we'd like or would like us to talk about, drop us an email at podcast@livingthepresent.co.uk and there's a good chance we'll add it to our little list, isn't it?
Yep, sounds good to me.
So yeah, visit the website, follow us on Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff, and if you could leave us a review on iTunes, that would be beautiful. If you go to our website, there's a in the podcast links, there's a little iTunes button. If you go through there, leave a review, blah blah blah. It takes 2 minutes and it would help us out a lot, and we love getting the feedback, don't we, Sean?
Yeah, we do indeed.
We do. Right, okay, I'm gonna go and check my phone to see if my wife's in labour.
Yep.
Hopefully not. Because I've had it on Do Not Disturb. Bit of a mistake, actually.
Yes.
But yeah, Sean, have a good week.
And you. And you. And lots of love to B. Hope birth goes well.
I'll keep you posted.
You take care.
Cheers.
See ya.
See ya.
Bye.